Freunde des gepflegten Korbballsports, herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe unseres Korbiger-Podcasts. Schön, dass ihr dabei seid. Vor allem schön, dass ihr dabei seid, weil einer leider nicht dabei sein kann. Einige von euch werden es auf den sozialen Kanälen des verehrten Kollegen Freaks schon gesehen haben. Was wir vor zwei Wochen, glaube ich, angekündigt haben, ist tatsächlich eingetreten. Der Nachwuchs ist da und meine wöchentliche Ankündigung vom heute unausgeschlafenen Ole Freaks dürfte momentan deutlich häufiger zutreffen. Deshalb natürlich nochmal Glückwunsch von dieser Stelle. Und ja, wir haben ja gesagt, wir wissen nicht genau, wie es weitergeht, beziehungsweise wie es weitergeht, wie wir es die kommenden Wochen machen. Wir wissen es jetzt, wie wir es diese Woche machen, denn wir haben Ersatz gefunden, beziehungsweise wir können Ole natürlich nicht ersetzen. Wir gehen aber in eine ganz andere Richtung. Kevin Kuleo war bei uns. Kevin ist Fotograf und hat eine überragende Basketball-Doku gedreht, Doing It in the Park, zusammen mit Bobito Garcia. Er bereist Afrika, er bereist die Welt und dokumentiert mit seiner Kamera Streetcourts, Basketball in anderen Basketballkulturen. Und es ist ein, wie ich finde, sehr interessantes Interview rausgekommen. Es hat wahnsinnig viel Spaß gemacht und wir hoffen natürlich, es macht euch auch Spaß. Gleichzeitig natürlich können wir nicht starten ohne den allseits beliebten Hinweis auf unsere Patreon-Seite. Denn auf patreon.com/korbiger-podcast, korbiger mit so sieht das aus. Könnt ihr uns mit monatlichen Beiträgen unterstützen, wenn ihr das wollt. Vielen, vielen Dank an alle, die das schon tun. Normalerweise gibt es dann als kleinen Ausgleich natürlich extra Content. Momentan ist das etwas schwierig. Wir werden da sicherlich wieder einsteigen. Und genau, jetzt geht's gleich rein ins Interview mit Kevin. Kevin spricht kein Deutsch leider, deswegen wird die ganze Sache auf Englisch stattfinden. Wir hoffen, das ist in Ordnung. Und ja, jetzt würde ich sagen, schauen wir einfach mal, was so ging. Genießt es hoffentlich und viel Spaß. And there he is, Kevin Kuleo. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, pleasure to be on and yeah, looking forward to discuss.
We'll have quite a few questions prepared, as I just told you, and there will be, we'll touch on everything basketball and everything you did basically or have done in your work over the last couple of years, because I really thought it was really interesting, but maybe, I don't know, maybe the best thing is you tell our listeners like in a few sentences what are you up to, what you've been up to, what you're doing?
My name is Kevin. I'm a French ball player first, nice. Before everything else. I've been documenting basketball culture for the past 15 years, mostly like playground basketball culture, through the lens of my photo cameras and also video cameras. So yeah, that's what I've been doing, you know, trying to elevate playground basketball to an art form through photography and videography for the most part. Yeah,
that's really nice. It's really nice. Yeah. I like to follow your Instagram and your website, Asphalt Chronicles. Really nice. Thank nice you. Pictures. And you've been like all around the globe, right? From New York to the Philippines.
Yes, not everywhere, but I've tried to cover a lot of the places that are breathing basketball. You know, yeah, from the Philippines to New York City, but also, you know, of course, Paris, where I'm based, but Africa. For the mm-hmm. past 6 years, I've been spending a lot of time in 10 to 12 countries in Africa to document basketball and its growth over there. Asia too. I spent a lot of time in Hong Kong and planning to spend more time over there. Tokyo, mm-hmm. Philippines, obviously, because it's a religion over there. Right, yeah. And yeah, I mean it's an endless quest, you know, to document the game around the world because it's growing everywhere. So yeah, I haven't explored maybe 70% of the world, but yeah, I'm playing. I'll see what I can do for the next years.
It's always nice when there's something left to do, right? So you don't, yeah. You haven't seen it all, so you can go somewhere else and plan something yeah. else. It's really amazing. I thought I saw that you like spent quite some time in Africa, even like you document Giants in Africa, right? The mm-hmm. Is it foundation or like Masai Ujiri is a chairman?
Yeah, it's exactly the new chairman from the Raptors and yeah. president from the Raptors, Masai Ujiri, Nigerian born. He created that nonprofit maybe 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. At first, it was just a camp for big men in Nigeria, and okay. yeah, and then. With his growth in the NBA world, he managed to grow his nonprofit, and now it's a moving basketball camp all around the continent. It's an elite basketball camp. So basically, it's like the 50, 200 best kids in the country that we gather for 2 or 3 days. We have like NBA coaches, and we do drills, and we do a lot of things for the kids, and to give them opportunities to shine on bigger NBA events like Basketball Without Borders, or get scholarships in the US or in Europe. And Masai Ujiri has been running this foundation for the past 15 years, and I've been collaborating with them for 6 years now. So spending every summer with them on the ground, traveling across the continent to find the new Joel Embiid or the new Hakeem Olajuwon.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But how did you get started? How did you how did that come up?
The creative director of the nonprofit, it's a nonprofit, and they have a creative director, which is quite surprising. But his name is Wilson Jong. He's a graphic designer who was working for the Raptors back then, and he was following my work and through my Instagram mostly. And one day he got in touch with me and asking me if I would be interested in going on the road with them. And it was in 2016. So yeah, I said yes instantly. Nice. And it was an amazing opportunity for me because he saw some of my work, you know, that I did in the past with a Seed Project and Oops for Hope, other nonprofits in Africa. So yeah, I managed to go there and spend an incredible month. We did like 6 countries and it was the most exhausting mission I've ever had, even though it was non-profit, but traveling in 1 month to six to eight countries getting on a plane, doing basketball camps that are from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day, plus the editing work on the photos and publishing work. It's a lot.
You're not finished when they're finished.
Exactly.
That's when the work starts, basically, then.
Yeah.
Right. And have there been any ties with you in Africa before? Or before you start with Giants of Africa, or has it?
I mean, my first trip to Africa was 2012, I think. With Seed Project. Because I remember early 2000s, I was communicating with Oops for Hope, which is one of the oldest nonprofit in Africa, based in South Africa, and I was exchanging emails with them and never managed to go there. And 2012, I went to Senegal for the first time to document Seed Project, it started there, and from there, you know, like, you meet a lot of people who are basically activists of basketball culture and the game out there. So from one nonprofit, you jump to the other and you try to help people. I did Senegal with Seed Project, South Africa with Upto, Togo with my friend Jean-Luc, who runs a nonprofit called Leading Youth Through Sports and Development. Everybody knows it. Everybody in Africa, I mean, in the basketball world, you know, they all know each other. Because there are a few like main actors and nonprofits, so they are all trying to support each other. It's really interesting.
Well, I really like it because usually, like, we in a podcast, we mainly talk, almost only exclusively talk about the NBA. So you just like cover basically the professional aspect of basketball, often perceive basketball as like a way or means of entertainment or making money. But I think, when I read what you write about your work and what you talk about, that is a lot more about the culture and what basketball can bring, and like the more positive or more subtle impact the game can have on people. And have you witnessed something like that in Africa, like being there for like so many years, or haven't been there for so many years?
I mean, not only in Africa, I mean, everywhere around the world. I always say that 99% of people playing basketball are amateur and just playing for the love of the game, you know, what we we see, you know, in the NBA is just like, yeah, that those 1% athletes that are making a living out of it, you know, and when you see the impact of the game on kids in Africa or even the Philippines or everywhere, you know, with Giants of Africa, we were in Somalia and we did a 2-hour clinic in Mogadishu, in the capital, with a nonprofit over there for women, a woman clinic, you know, Muslim women who are like prohibited to do any sports, you know, because of the threat on their lives, you know, and because of the terrorism and you know, like extremism. So we managed to do a 2-hour clinic, you know, with armed forces around us, you know, it was like super, like, it was super tense, but the joy we brought to these people, you know, these women, you know, like just the fact that we came from all around the world to, to spend like 2 or 3 hours with them to do a clinic and teach them a few basics and fundamentals and bring basketball in outfits, you know, like when you see the joy that basketball can give to people like that, you're just like convinced that the game has a power beyond an NBA court, you know.
Like regarding that, I kind of like your analogy. I don't think, I'm not sure whether you've got it on your new home page, but you had it on your old one, that the playground's a spiritual place, an open air confessional, with the hoop standing there as a priest.
Yeah.
Ready to listen to sorrows. How did that come together?
You know, I spent most of my first years of photography shooting empty courts, and that's how I always felt with an empty basketball court. You know, because you know, when you as a basketball player, when you are like just in front of the hoop, you know. You feel that because I remember me being a kid, you know, when I was angry, frustrated, or whatever, or sad, you know, I would go play basketball on the playground, you know, because that's where I find, you know, my peace, you know, and that's why I always, you know, try to, as a photographer, to capture that, you know, the poetry behind a basketball court. Of course, there's that notion of architecture, landscape, which I'm quite obsessed with. But but the spiritual dimension that I think only a basketball player can understand. You know, that's why I'm trying to convey through those empty courts photos. And now you see that it has become a trend. Everybody wants to shoot empty basketball courts and.
Right. Yeah.
Through social networks, like it's a cool thing to do. But I think for me, it was more like a spiritual thing to do. You know, shoot this course.
Yeah, I could really relate because I really find whenever I see a basketball court, I'm not a good photographer. I don't have like a feeling for angles or anything. But, I shoot with them. I think our listeners on our Instagram, I just like posted 2 or 3 pictures of me shooting a basketball court or a hoop most of the time. But I feel like they're always, or like they feel like landmarks wherever you go. You know, it's just like you see a basketball court and it's just somewhere in between, like, it might be a housing project or like in the wild, like the one you shot in Iceland.
Yeah.
That's really nice. And so that, I really could relate to that one and like the spiritual part, because it really is like, it can bring like you down, as you said, like you're angry or whatever. And then you go shoot some hoops. You don't need someone around. You can just be by yourself and just you and your priest.
totally.
And I really like that one. And is that something you like, it's a bit abstract, but something you can witness in people, like as someone who observes people in different parts of the world, in different settings, different like ways of playing basketball. Is there something you can witness in people when you watch them play basketball?
Yeah, of course. You know, funny story is that I was in Hong Kong 2018 to shoot a story about old guys playing basketball, you know, like mostly like 80 years older. Okay. And I was fascinating over there to see these guys, you know, because they have a lot of old people doing sports, you know, tai chi or running and stuff like that, you know. But basketball is something to me that requires a bit more of a, you know, in shape body to do, you know, because you it's a contact sport. So, but I found people that groups of old guys that are playing every morning at 7 a.m., you know, gathering on the same court. And they've been doing that for 40 years, you know. Yeah. And I see that in them, you know, like the passion for the game and how like it has become a ritual, something almost religious. Once we were there, we found one court like isolated around a big building, colorful buildings too, and an 86 years old guy showed up with like gardening gloves on his hand and a basketball, and he started like playing by himself, you know, and that's his habit, daily habit, you know, 86 years old. And yeah, it's, yeah, when you travel around the world and you see that, and you realize how, you know, the game can you know, help people, you know, find a, you know, maybe a goal or just like find, you know, like an escape in some ways. Mm-hmm. It's super interesting because, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't see that many 80-year-old plus guys, you know, playing in France, you know. It's quite a room, yeah.
Yeah. Same in Germany. Never really, like 40 plus sometimes, but mm-hmm. usually it's a lot younger, which actually I really like that story you told, because I always, I like, not always, but sometimes I ask myself how I'm going to be aging on the court, or like how long I'm going to be able to be playing, basically. But maybe it's just up to you. It's not up to, you know, when you just, you don't have to play 3-on-3 and like you just go and shoot some hoops and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. I obviously it's a question of culture, you know. I think Asian people are more likely to continue sports until they die, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't have that in our cultures, I think. That's why, you know. However, I went to shoot something in Barcelona. What was it? It was, we were with Nike and we were in the FCB arena in Paulo Granada. And there was like a group of old players from the FCB, you know, but they were like 60, 70, and they were playing pickup, you know, at the gym.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are like some groups of people like that, but it's more rare, you know,
I think. That's right. We like to say, in Europe, I think we like to say, I'm too old for this.
Yeah, that's true. Like, that's true. But that's, you know, I think that's maybe our generation will shift that thing. I think because we grew up with social networks, we grew up with like WhatsApp, and maybe when we'll be 70, we'll still be using iPhone and WhatsApp, and maybe we'll have like WhatsApp groups of old guys playing basketball.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Connect to play basketball. Yeah,
you know, it's like video game. We grew up with video games, so maybe we will be more likely to play video games at 70 and 80 years old.
It's once you fall in love with something, you won't let it go if you don't have to, right?
Yeah.
So it's that's it. But it's actually like one of my best basketball like pickup games I've had was in Venice, and I played with, I must have been like 50 plus guys, and it was just like I was like the sixth man, and we played 3-on-3, and it was just fun, and you know, there was a lot of trash talk going on, but it was in a friendly way, so you know, you didn't feel like I was the odd one out, not being American and not being a local and everything. But like, it was really nice. And I liked the way they had such a nice vibe to them, because it was like, as you said, that was their habit or their ritual, their daily ritual. And it was like good friends playing pickup, no matter the age, basically.
Yeah, definitely.
And you said, like, you obviously you started pretty early. And what was the first thing you took away from basketball? What was like the first thing you can remember
as a player?
As a player, when you played for the first time, when you saw it for the first time, maybe. I don't know how you came across it.
I started through my brother, who was playing in a club next to my home. So he took me once at a training with him and his friend, and I was 6 years old. But I couldn't even tell why I started playing. I just enjoyed it, you know, going to that training. I don't know. I think it's just the having that goal where you have to throw something in that special space, you know, that the rim is, and maybe that's I don't know. Yeah, I don't even know why I started basketball, honestly, because I didn't grow up watching the NBA. I didn't grow up, you know, with the TV channel at home that would broadcast the NBA game. So I think it's just, yeah, something that felt natural, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit hypnotic, right? Trying to put the ball in the hoop.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a simple challenge, I think. That's why that game is fascinating, is that you see a circle, you want to throw something in it, you know, like it's like people aiming for a garbage, you know, it's like, it's a natural thing to do, you know, even if you're not a ball player. So
you're not only shooting, obviously, like with a camera, you play yourself, but you said you've been to Asia, Hong Kong, you played in Nigeria, you played in the States. So how do you approach a new city and a new court when you get there? Do you how do you introduce yourself to the locals? How do you start playing?
It depends. As a player, it's way easier for me to interact. You know, when I just come dressed as a ball player and they see that I want to play, it's way easier. It's quite natural. Like any pick a player, you know, it's like, hey, we'll get next, or can I get in? You know, this is easy. But sometimes, you know, I'm in situations where I just come as somebody from the outside with a camera, and these moments sometimes are a little bit. You have to be a little bit more subtle when you approach people, you know, because you know, in some places the people don't like to get photographed. So, sometimes it's just through discussions with people that are on the sideline, you know, or sometimes I try to be as discreet as possible, but. It's a photographer's job to get in touch with people and try to create a connection before shooting, you know. So that's what I try to do, you know. It depends, you know, like in places like Westforce in New York, you know, you can trigger the camera like that because nobody cares. It's New York City,
you're like used to
tourists everywhere, you know, but, you know, sometimes you're in more like, remote places where you know, especially in Africa, you know, where they don't like to see photographers because they're always scared that you're gonna use the photos of, you know, their photos to do something with, you know, like big campaign or whatever, you know. So yeah, no, it depends. Honestly, it depends on the situation and the country and the culture. It depends on a lot of things. I think the easiest way in on a playground is just being a basketball player and just playing the game, and if you're a good player, it's even better.
So. Yeah. So then they accept you.
Yeah. Exactly.
So are you the what kind of player are you when you get on new court? Are you the cocky one, or are you the like I try to like keep in the background and then just like start to keep going?
No, I'm a competitor, so yeah. I played the same way I play in France, you know. Trying to shoot on people's head, you know. that's what I do. I'm a shooter, so and I like that usually because, you know, when you get on the new court, nobody knows you, and then they tend to be surprised, but you know, by what you can do. So me, you know, and it's interesting in places like Hong Kong, for example, the intensity level is quite different. You know, they're not really as intense as in Paris, defensively. So, you know, they move differently. So, you know, like places like that, you don't find the challenge you'd like to find because there are like so many courts and so many players, and you wish you had the same court in Europe, you know, because they are like so nice and colorful and everything.
Okay. Yeah.
But the competition is not on the same level. So,
a mix would be nice.
I mean, if we had their courts, you know, in Europe, it would be amazing.
So it's like the court situation isn't perfect in France either, is it?
No, it's the same, you know. I mean, Europe is the same everywhere, I guess. It's getting better because like cities start to understand the value of having beautiful and nicely designed courts. It's not perfect yet, but we still have a long way to go, you know. I think playground basketball culture is actually knowing what skateboarding culture has experienced this past decade, you know, where like skate parks are being built around Europe, you know, because the cities are understanding the value of having skate parks in downtowns, and so they can put the skaters over there, and they're not in the streets anymore. And I think for basketball, it's starting to get in the people's mind that beautiful court, nicely designed is a vehicle for social interaction and to revive communities.
That's true. Yeah.
And I wish that you know, everywhere around the world, or especially in Europe, we would build more basketball courts and less like multi-sports stuff. Mm-hmm. You know. Because you know we see these ugly mixes of soccer and basketball cages. You know it's a shame because nobody uses that. You know
Or as there's a goal underneath the hoop, you won't be playing basketball because there's always going to be people playing football in Europe.
Exactly. It's dangerous for ball players. So only the kids use that to play soccer. So it is what it is.
It is what it is. But it's getting better. We actually have a really nice new court in Munich now. They just like built like this old factory.
I saw it. Did you
see it?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I saw it from my friends from Kerwinek. They showed me.
Right. Yeah. They're really wonderful. Cool.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Right. You started with K1X, right? Did you? What was that all about? Like when you managed to bring it up?
So I did a business training. At first, I was working in a basketball store in my hometown, Nantes, on the west coast of France. And I did that for 3.5 years. And then a French like sports brand distributor approached me because he was distributing K1X. I was already in touch with them because I was writing articles for a French basketball magazine about sneakers. And I interviewed the guys from K1X back then in 2005, and the guy from that distribution company came to me and he hired me as a marketing and sales manager for France to manage K1X in France.
Okay.
During 3 years and a half, I went across France, Belgium, and Luxembourg to sell the brand and manage the marketing too. So. And that's how I started first with K1X. And in 2009, I stopped being a salesman and marketing guy to become a full-time photographer. And K1X hired me on my first like collection book shoot and that video we did called Art and Soul of New York City.
Ah, yeah, nice, yeah.
Yeah, so those were my first like freelance experiences, you know, through K1X. And the following years, we kept working together on the collection books, going to New York City, shooting the best dunkers in the world, you know, wearing their gear, doing like, run and gun style shoots, you know, on the playgrounds over there. And I think those were my best like experiences in New York City as a photographer. I think it was just so spontaneous, you know. Getting out of the van on the court we like with crazy dunkers, you know, we could do anything you wanted. As a photographer, it's amazing to be able to athletes like that. It was fun. It was just fun.
Cool. That sounds like, and really fit your approach, right? With trying to capture the soul of the game. And
Exactly. That's why, I loved K1X back then because they really understood what basketball culture was about. Yeah.
Yeah, you said it was your best experience in New York, like as a photographer. But then, obviously, there's that like famous, hopefully famous documentary you put together with Bobito Garcia, right? Dude It in the Park, where you two traveled New York street courts from summer and played and interviewed people. And I really, that's actually how I got in touch, or like how I first heard about you. Watching the documentary, and how did you and Bobito meet? How did the whole thing unfold?
So we met 16 years ago, first via email, because back then 2004 Bobito launched. He was the co-founder of a magazine called Bounce, and it was the small like streetball magazine. You know, there were like a group of four or five guys who launched that, and it was the only playground basketball magazine in the world back then. And me seeing that in France, I was barely starting photography. I sent him a photo that I shot of a friend of mine who was dunking. He published my email and the photo in the Reader's Corner of the magazine. And that's how we first got in touch, you know. And a few months later, I would go to New York City for the first time. And he showed me around for 3 days. I played my first game of 21. And we became friends. He came to France to DJ. And we played basketball when he came to France. You know, that's how we kept the connection alive. You know, every year we would almost see each other either in Paris or New York. Building projects together and playing ball, yeah.
That sounds nice. He seems like a fun guy when he...
Yeah, he is.
So, you said that what you liked about skateboarding photography and that was like it kind of connected the energy of between the sport and the architecture around, and that's something you like to like bring to life in basketball photography as well. So New York must have been like paradise, just going around, looking around.
Yeah, definitely. Growing up with both playground basketball culture and skateboarding culture, I grew up really influenced by New York City, obviously. You know, from the New York mixtapes and to Soul in the Hole, you know, documentary. Mm-hmm. It was a dream for me to go to New York City and going there and documenting all these courts. You know, of course, there are like more than the southern basketball courts over there, more diverse than anywhere else in the world. Yeah. You know, in terms of the architecture and colors and then. The hoops themselves are unique with the metal backboards and the way they are perforated and the wood behind it. You know, like there are like so much details in the New York City basketball that are interesting to capture. Of course, as a architecture or landscape fanatic, it's quite insane to be in a city and just look around and see basketball courts everywhere. And I have the same feeling with Hong Kong. Hong Kong City is my new York right now. So,
okay.
Because, I spend a lot of time there, and that's what I find the most interesting basketball courses right now in terms of, and it really like my fascination for architecture and basketball courts, you know, I really found its heaven in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. Okay. it's the location as well, right? With like the sea around and the tropical plants,
but New York has that too, you know. Even though it's less tropical both cities are major arbors, so yeah. That's why it's interesting to see the similarities with these. But of course, New York is the mecca and will always be the mecca of basketball. And you see over there, like the courts are evolving too, you know. Mm-hmm. Slowly, they're replacing the traditional metal backboards by fiberglass. A lot of courts are being renovated and freshly painted. So hopefully, like, they'll preserve the authenticity and those metal backboards and handmade rims. But we'll see how it evolves, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't lose its flavor.
Yeah, hopefully. That'd be a shame. But how did you come across Hong Kong as a basketball town? Because usually, was it just by accident or did somebody tell you about it?
2005 or 2006, I found one photo online of a court that was surreal, you know. And I couldn't find the photographer who did it, and it was an amazing court that I ended up finding in 2012 2013 when we went to Hong Kong with Bobito to screen Doing It in the Park with Nike and for some visa reason I had to stay in Hong Kong for 4 or 5 days by myself, and that's when I really had the time to explore the city. And I found the quote that I was searching for through like an intense Google search and everything, and reaching out to people. And after that, I started searching more quotes in Hong Kong when I was there, and I was like quite surprised to see that many quotes, you know. And then the colors and the way the shape they are in, and then. I had like a friend of mine was a sort of a guide, you know, and then knew the city by heart, and then he took me to five or six different courts, and yeah, and I loved it so much, and I was like, I need to go back to Hong Kong. So yeah, I've been going there now for like, I think I've been there like four times now, but I'm planning to go back there soon again to finish the job. But yeah, Hong Kong has more basketball courts than New York City, so
that's interesting.
Yeah, and of course you've seen like the rainbow courts, and you know, yeah, the most like visible layers of that city, you know? Yeah. But yeah, it's surreal. It's an amazing city. Yeah.
It sounds cool. And are they packed with people, or is it?
So that's not really. I mean, you have like some known courts that are packed with people, like Victoria Courts and Thousand Playground and Victoria Playground that are the most known and usually like packed. You have some that can be packed, but there are like so many courts that it's impossible to have that many ball players. You know, yeah. I think it's some are used by kids, other by like confirmed ball players. But the two main courts were like regular people. You know, like the guys who play often pick a basketball player. Like Thousand Park and Victoria Park.
Okay. But it's nice to have a nice court to yourself sometimes. So just you can,
yeah, of course,
like,
of course,
get your, yeah, like enjoy and relax with some, not, yeah, exactly, without having to compete. Yeah. But New York, I really like, yeah, as I said, I really like the documentary and the courts and all the characters you interviewed. And so with New York, whenever it comes to New York, like everybody talks about the Mecca and about basketball, like being the inner city game. So it's always been basically, in especially in New York, I think, in close touch and contact with urban culture. And does that kind of predestine basketball to being more than a sport, maybe, to some people? Or did you experience that? Did you feel that when you talked to those people?
Yeah, I guess. I think basketball can be a lifestyle in. I mean, it's easier to be allowed to have basketball as a lifestyle in inner city, for sure. For multiple reasons, because the game branches out in many aspects of life. You know, branches out on your outfit, on style, right, on your language, on. Especially in New York City, the courts are most of the time located at the bottom of the buildings or surrounded with buildings where people live in. So I don't know. It's I think the city helps people to embrace basketball's lifestyle too, because it's a city where everybody is doing sport and you know. People are running and doing cycling, and you know, even like a sport like football, you know, has grown a lot in New York City because the city has built football fields in smaller spaces. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's called the city game, right? Basketball. Yeah. Basketball is called the city game. Yeah. So there are multiple reasons for that, and yeah. New York City has made it the city game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in Europe, it's also the city game. It's just that we haven't built as many basketball courts, and then we are in a football-dominated countries, you know, and continent. So,
tiniest village always a football pitch.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's gonna change one day.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll take over one day.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I think that city game is funny because often like a core feels like a microcosm of a city or a place where you are, right? So the people, it kind of represents, and you can feel, kind of get the vibe within those, I don't know, 50 square meters or whatever it is, right?
So exactly. Yeah, the court is a good way to gather people, and it's great for social inclusion.
Yeah.
And you can play against kids, against a priest, against a homeless. Right, can play against everybody on the basketball court.
I mean, you mentioned like the style and everything. So I think it's kind of an obvious question, but when you, like, as a European coming over to some of the most renowned courts in the world in New York, and you want to play, do they underestimate you, or do you just like wait until you, like, did your first moves,
of course,
and then?
Of course. They definitely underestimate you, because back then my English wasn't as good as today, I guess, and I'm white, they always, I mean, you know, basketball is mostly an Afro-American dominated sport, especially in New York City. Yeah. So,
and you didn't dunk during warm-ups, right? Did you?
No, I don't dunk at all. But the fact that I could, you know, like dribble, and I had a good handle, and I had like some crossover in me, and I could shoot. I had good fundamentals, you know, like a lot of guys were surprised when we would play, you know. So it was good. It was interesting. You've seen the film, you know, like when there's the trash talk sequence, you know. I'm playing, and there's that guy calling me the Yugoslavian. But it's interesting. It's super interesting to compete against other people in New York City. You know, it opens everybody's mind, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's really hard not to get intimidated, isn't it? Well, that's how I would like feel about it.
In some places, you'd get intimidated in some ways, you know. But more because some guys looked a little bit, you know,
they're just better.
Under drugs.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
You wouldn't know what to expect, you know, from some guys. You know?
Yeah.
How they would behave, you know. But besides that, like, you know, like, no, every guy that play pickups, you know, from the Bronx to Staten Island, you know, as long as you can hold your ground on the court and play clean basketball, they respect you. Yeah.
And what was your? Do you have like a specific game you like to think back about the most, or your favorite game or something? Favorite court, maybe.
I mean, the most memorable moment was when we played pickup in Rikers Island, mm-hmm. in the prison.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I won that game I was playing in with two or three inmates, I think, and then Bobito was in my squad too, and we filmed everything. We haven't released that footage yet, but we won that game. So, and it was interesting, you know, to play with in a prison and to play with the inmates, and you'd see like other inmates who were like locked up in the other buildings. Mm-hmm. They were looking at us and watching the game. So it was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually what I thought when I saw it. It's like, that must have been interesting. But how did that work out? How did you make that happen?
Bobito had a friend, former graffiti artist, who was the warden for the the jail, and through him we got the way in the prison, you know. So we went, Bobito, me, a DOP, a sound guy, and a friend photographer. We managed to get in for maybe 4 hours in the prison, and they selected a group of inmates who were ball players and were okay to be filmed and interviewed, and that's how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It was just us in the yard, you know.
Yeah.
Every other inmate were locked in, and we were with these maybe like 8 inmates and a few wardens, and amazing. Yeah, it was quite scary at some point, because you know, like, some of these guys are, but it was impressive too, because a lot of these guys who were locked in were young, you know, like maybe 18 years old, 19, you know, 20s. So that was the scary part, you know. They were just starting their lives, and we're already locked in. Yeah.
Yeah, especially now when you hear how easy they can get locked up in the USA.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And did you have time to like talk to them like privately behind the camera, and did they tell you something, or was it just like, okay, we meet for the basketball?
Not really. Yeah, not really. I mean, we did the interviews.
Yeah. You know,
No. So some of them we discussed with them on the court, you know, but you know, it was pretty organized, and we couldn't stay 2 hours more discussing with the guys, you know.
Yeah. But did they embrace the moment? It felt like they really like so on.
Yeah, they loved it because, you know, we were interested in them, in their lives, and we took a moment to come and you know, change their daily life too. You know, these guys are locked up, and then they only have like 2 hours of basketball per week.
Oh, wow.
So the fact that we came and to shoot them playing basketball and everything, it was really, it meant something for them.
Yeah. It must have been, being able to showcase what they can do on the court in front of a camera must feel interesting. How was it? How did you perceive the atmosphere, like being in a prison, knowing that you could, like that you would be leaving soon, obviously, but,
I mean, it's impressive, you know, because you have so many gates, you know, the just crossing in the corridors, we passed by a few of the young inmates, you know, the look they had in their eyes, and then, you know, it's like you feel sorry for them because they're young. Mm-hmm. The barbed wires everywhere in the when you access the yard, you know, it's all these small details are quite impressive, you know. And the thing that struck me the most was because Rikers Island is in Queens and it's not far from the airport, you know, you are in the jail and you see all the planes flying above the jail. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like so, you know, frustrating being you're locked up and then you have like planes flying over your head, you know, it's
seeing people going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's, I think it's either you get depressed by it or you take it as a source of motivation to get out.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then reconstruct your life, I guess.
Yeah. And like make up dreams.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's true. Yeah, but that's interesting. I never thought of that before. Yeah, I think it's so interesting because when I saw the movie for the first time, I didn't know about like, or I knew a lot less. I don't know now, but I knew a lot less about the prison system in the States, you know? And now it feels like with all the things that we've learned maybe during the past year or something. So it really feels to me when I saw it, I watched it another time, like I watched it before the interview, obviously, the movie once more. And it feels a lot different. It struck me differently. You know what I mean? So, So is it the same for you in a way? Cause back, I don't know how you, how much you knew back then when you went there, but.
I mean, I feel the same. I think it's tough, you know, as a photographer and documentarist, I always like sort of dream to document basketball in a prison environment.
Mm-hmm.
So having the opportunity to go there and make it happen. Yeah, I was quite excited and impressed at the same time. But yeah, I think it's, I hope I could do that again, in a different environment, different prison, and because I think, you know, inmates are quite happy when they see somebody from the outside, and then especially somebody who cares.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. Listens to them about talking about something they enjoy, like playing basketball.
Yeah. Exactly. And so exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Back to the streets, basically to New York. There are a lot of characters in the movie. What was the funniest character you met on the? Because I feel like there's always on every street court. I mean, I haven't been to many, but especially in the States, there's always someone.
The funniest character is by far Jack Ryan. You know the. Our friend who was the most impressive shooter in New York City. Jack, because he's a natural-born comedian, I guess. You know, he's playing for the crowd. He's playing to be funny. He's playing for the woos and the owls. You know?
Yeah.
So, but now we've met amazing guys. You know, everywhere we'd go. You know, There is one called Mark Norman that we interview, you know, where we did, I think in the Bronx, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was this old school guy, former local legend, you know, of the court. And when we interviewed him, he was half drunk, but he gave us some of the best punchlines, you know, that we put in the film. So, you know, so yeah, I mean, we met a lot of people, and we only used maybe 1/3 of the interviews we had.
Okay, wow.
Because we interviewed 60 people, so we still have a lot of unreleased content, you know. So it's pretty cool.
So there needs to be a director's cut or something.
Yeah, maybe.
you filmed, like, you shot courts, empty courts. You shot with amateurs. And then you shot some of the biggest stars of the game. You even shot Barack Obama, right, with Giants mm-hmm. of Africa.
Yeah.
As a photographer, is it always, or do you always take the same approach? Or is it like sometimes, okay, that, I don't know, that's a different person? Or is it like, do you have something, a personality as a photographer that you usually use?
No, I'm not really. I mean, I guess it depends on the mission, mm-hmm. but no, I mean, you know, sometimes, let's say we with Nike, you have like 2 minutes to shoot okay. five photos of Antetokounmpo or with Jordan, same. Like you have like 1:30 with Russell Westbrook to do a photo. You know, yeah. That's the reality of commercial photography, you know, and when you're on events with these guys. You know, I think it's about trying to get the most of the moment you have with somebody, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But let's say with Obama, you know, I was lucky to be the only photographer allowed in his space to be okay, next well. To him. Mm-hmm. So in that specific event mm-hmm. we did in Kenya, so which was already like a crazy privilege. So yeah. the pressure you have is not to disappoint people with the photos you make, because you are the only one who has yeah. that access, and yeah. you have like other photographers or content creators that are around and watching you.
Yeah.
So if the photos you do are not correct, you yeah. know that yeah, you won't get the job afterwards. So yeah, especially yeah, and you don't want to miss these photos, you know, these mm-hmm. moments, because they're so rare. But no, I don't have, like, besides that, I don't have like a different approach, but mm-hmm. I'm just trying to let my eye, you know, do the job, you know.
All right, yeah, see, like, capture what you see, and then
yeah, yeah. exactly.
And this is like some sort of interaction where you said, like, you got 2 minutes with Antetokounmpo, you got like 90 seconds with Russ Westbrook. Is there like, you talk to them beforehand, what they like, what they don't like, or is it just like, okay, here's your photographer, he's gonna shoot some photos and tell you what to do?
It depends.
Okay,
honestly, it depends. Depends on the situation. I shot Kemba Walker, Victor Oladipo, and Jabari Parker a while ago for Jordan Brand.
Mm-hmm.
It was more relaxed. We had time, you know, to discuss and you know, exchange a bit, even though it was still like quite speed, you know, quite intense.
Mm-hmm.
But in other situations, you don't have time, you know, really. Yeah. It's like, okay, do this, do that. And sometimes the athletes, you know, they kind of like to be directed, you know, and mm-hmm. so to have like somebody tell them, okay, do this, do that, because they're not always, you know, in the mood to act funny or do something, you know, interesting.
Yeah.
So it's better sometimes when you direct them.
Probably yeah. they don't enjoy any second of a promotion
exactly,
tour.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, exactly. Some enjoy and yep. others don't. You know, it depends on the mood they are. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Was there one who's been specifically nice and specifically happy to be photographed? And
the most interesting experience I had, I think, was with Antetokounmpo, mm-hmm. Spending a week in Athens with him and his family to build the marketing for Nike, because they wanted to understand where he's from and everything. So they sent me and my brother to do the video with the Nike people. We were there on the ground for a week to document his roots, his first club, his first playground, where he grew up, you know. And that was interesting mm-hmm. because, you know, following him, showing us and telling us, you know, what was in his story. That was interesting to capture, you know, because when you're there to document that, I mean, he was like quite excited and enthusiastic to say, hey, this is the church where I used to go. This is the restaurant where I used to eat in between my pickup games, you know, okay, and I think, yeah, so this is quite nice, you know, to be in an athlete where that's why what I enjoy the most is going with an athlete where he grew up, you know, to rediscover where they come from. I think you understand a lot about somebody when you go in the place that raised them.
Yeah, but sometimes maybe like a person, once you get somewhere, yeah, as you said, where you've got race and experiences, you kind of, you don't become that person from back then anymore, but you just like, I can imagine that it opens people up. And Giannis always comes across like someone who gets excited. Who likes to get excited. And so I really like watching him because he feels so genuine with what he's doing. And so, yeah, as I say, he genuinely gets excited and he seems to be like a humble person, like quote unquote normal person. Is he like that? Or did you experience him like that? Or?
He was normal. Now he has reached a level of fame we really felt a switch, you know, from the moment where we were in Greece and the year after when he got the MVP and we launched his first shoe, you know, in Athens. You could feel like he became a superstar, you know, as soon as he got his shoe and the MVP trophy. But he's still like a super humble guy and you know, but he has the look, you know, he has the look of somebody who's really ambitious and really really focused, like a lot of these superstars, you know.
Yeah, they kind of need to have that, right? I think otherwise.
Yeah, just, I guess. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Did you shoot Westbrook, right? Was it he? I hear so that like his teammates really like him, and he is like when he talks to the media, he's a bit harsh. How was it? How was your experience with him?
No, he seems super cool.
Yeah,
yeah, he seemed like a super nice guy. Yeah, I gave him a copy of my magazine, and he was like, he started discussing with me about it and everything. So.
Cool.
I mean, it was super short with him, so I couldn't tell really. But it's always tough to judge somebody on.
You're right.
It's like, you know, somebody saying that a guy is stupid because he didn't want to sign an autograph. But
yeah, you
don't know his life, and maybe he didn't have time or whatever. Yeah. So,
but it's tough. It can leave an impression, right? So, and it's nice that he left a good one. So your magazine, you mentioned it, Asphalt Chronicles. So it's like you're documenting, it's basically your pictures and documenting certain places through the lens of your camera, through...
Yeah, it's more of a road guide, you know, through photography. I'm doing like one issue is about one city at a time, you know, it's like... because, you know, growing up, I used to travel to play basketball and would go to Barcelona, I would go even in Germany just to play basketball. And as a foreigner, you always wonder, like, where to play and what to do and everything. So always that thing in mind of doing a sort of journal where you'd find the best courts and even, like, the place where to eat or where to sleep, whatever. And through my work as a photographer, you know, I gather a lot of content in the cities I go to. So the magazine is a way for me to exploit that content and print my photos instead of having them like sleeping in my computer and share my photos and my work with people. So and obviously like bring that traveling journal aspect. So I made a. Three, four issues, and I'm working on the next one. With COVID, everything has gone slow.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
yeah.
Especially traveling has like taken a bit of a dump recently. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I'm looking forward to do the next one, and whenever I can. It's more of a personal project mm-hmm. that I do when I can. So
yeah, cool. And what's the next one going to be? Do you already know? Can you already tell?
I can tell. I'd like to do Athens mm-hmm. Because I've gathered a lot of content in Greece for mm-hmm. the past years, and I just need to go back there to do some interviews and groundwork again. But hopefully, Athens, and because I like, you know, I'm involved in this with a creative director who's a lot into typography and everything. So I think he loves, you know, playing around with Greek alphabet and everything. So yeah, I think we have something really creative to do with that. Yeah,
nice. That sounds nice. So I think we're close to the end, but is there mm-hmm. like any project, basketball related obviously, that you would love to do sometime in the future? Any place you want to shoot, any player, any, I don't know, any movie mm-hmm. project?
So first I'm releasing my first photography book maybe around September, October. We'll be printing this summer. So it's a book that will explore the question of memory and time, I guess. It's through 76 photos of court textures and graphics. So it's going to be really abstract, but I think a lot of basketball players will understand where I'm going with this. So yeah, we're printing this summer, so then it's about getting the right timing to release the book. But this is the current projects, and then I'd love to do a follow-up of doing it in a park. It's in progress. I'm pitching currently in the US. We'll see where it goes. And another book about Hong Kong that is in the works. But this one takes more time, and I need to go back there. So we'll see when COVID is done, so I can travel back there.
Fingers crossed it works out. But
we'll see it.
But that sounds interesting. Definitely Dune Park 2, so mix some German in. I'm really excited to see that when it comes out. And last thing, favorite move on the basketball court, what do you like to do? What's your go-to thing?
Just a pull-up jumper off a pick, you know.
Yeah.
I like that. You know, I became more of a shooter getting older.
Yeah.
So, I still love shooting threes, even outdoors. And I don't know. I have like an in and out crossover that I like to do mm-hmm. too. So maybe these two, I guess.
Oh, nice. be the shooter keeps you on the court longer, right? So you can play until your 80s. That must be the goal.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on, Kevin.
Thank you, Max.
Guys, follow Kevin on Instagram, obviously, Kevin Coolio, and Asphalt Chronicles. Check out his work because it's really nice. Check out his website. And thank you very much again. Take care.
My pleasure.
See you. Bye-bye.